Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. We begin this hour with the notion of what the Bush administration would have us believe about the treatment of detainees in the so-called war on terror at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, and particularly at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Here's Vice President Cheney.
We live up to our obligations and international treaties that we're party to and so forth. But the fact is, you can have a fairly robust interrogation program without torture. And we need to be able to do that.
That's right. The U.S. does not torture. Here's President Bush speaking on the subject in 2006.
This country doesn't torture. We're not going to torture. We will interrogate people we pick up off the battlefield to determine whether or not they've got information that'll be helpful to protect the country.
Whatever you call it, torture or not, the details of what went on at Guantanamo and Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan have been coming out because of a 2007 report by the International Committee of the Red Cross in Geneva. The report, which was supposedly confidential, was actually obtained by journalist Mark Danner and extensively quoted in a gripping article in the New York Review of Books recently. Now the New York Times has picked up the story. Scott Shane joins us. He's a New York Times reporter speaking with us from Maryland. And also Greg Block, who's a visiting law professor at the University of Chicago, who's also trained as a medical doctor. He joins us from Chicago. First of all, good morning to you both.
Good morning.
And the particular issue, good morning. The particular issue I want to focus on here, which is the focus of your piece in today's paper, Scott Shane, is the apparent complicity of medical personnel in either controlling or enhancing, I can't tell which, the procedures, the interrogation procedures, the so-called waterboarding and other techniques that were used. Doctors were present. First of all, Scott Shane, what did you discover and how unusual are these details as you've obtained them from the ICRC report?
Well, let me correct one one point. The 14 people that the ICRC investigators interviewed were the so-called high-level al-Qaeda detainees who had actually undergone these harsh interrogations, what the ICRC describes as torture, not at Guantanamo or Bagram, but for the most part in secret locations overseas. We've reported that those locations included secret bases in Thailand and Poland.
So they might have been detained ultimately at Guantanamo or Bagram, but on their way, the interrogations themselves actually took place at the black sites.
That's exactly right. In September of 06, President Bush announced that 14 people, some of whom were involved in the 9/11 attacks, had been moved to Guantanamo and for the first time acknowledged officially that the United States was holding them. But on the medical issue, this ICRC report, which is based entirely on interviews with these detainees, so there's always the possibility that there are inaccuracies, although the accounts pretty much adhere to one another. They describe medical personnel, and the prisoners, not surprisingly, weren't certain whether they were physicians or paramedics of some kind, or in some cases psychologists, had monitored the treatment that they got, everything from shackling people to the ceilings, to keeping them for days on end in cold cells, to keeping them up all night with loud music, and including waterboarding, where water is poured into the mouth and nose of the prisoner. All that was monitored by medical personnel who would check on them from time to time and sometimes give a signal to continue the treatment, sometimes say you have to stop or you have to change something. So their impression was that this was partly intended to prevent deaths or permanent injury, but certainly partly intended to mainly intended to keep the interrogations going.
Well, Greg Block, you were interviewed by Scott Shane for his piece. Now, the Sean Penns of the world might say that's outrageous. What a horrible thing for a doctor to do, to be a part of an interrogation. But the Sean Hannitys of the world might say, hey, what other country would torture and have a doctor there in case you get hurt? Which is it, Greg Block?
Well, other countries have, and we might not want to associate ourselves with them. South Africa under apartheid, Chile under Pinochet, the Uruguayan military dictatorship. This is a pattern. And we have seen this over the last 30 or 40 years dictatorships that have embarked upon systematic programs of torture.
Can you imagine getting a call from the government saying, we need you to hop on a plane and go to this black site because we're going to, you know, sort of quietly electrocute some fellow?
Well, we'd hope that doctors would say no. And oftentimes, even in Pakistan in 1979, when doctors were called upon to administer corporal punishment, the medical association said no. So doctors sometimes have said no. And to their credit, some American military doctors have said no. Our own investigations of physician involvement in some of these abuses have found some naysayers. But all you need is a few willing to go along.
Scott Shane, is there a medical practice on the subject of monitoring government interrogations like this? And is it differ in the United States than, say, you know, doctors who are taught around the world to do no harm?
Well, I think the Hippocratic Oath sort of applies around the world, and certainly it is supposed to be honored in the United States. I think, you know, in terms of judging the Americans' involvement here, it's important to consider that this was unprecedented in terms of an officially approved, authorized program, approved all the way up to the President of the United States. To my knowledge, at least, the United States had not used such methods in interrogation prior to 2002. Obviously, there were exceptions to that on the ground in Vietnam or other places. But in terms of a coordinated official policy emanating from the top, so it's hard to say that there's any precedent for this in our history.
So, Scott, you described that the ICRC report is based on the accounts of detainees. Have you managed to find any of the medical personnel who might have been present at these interrogations? And if not, what would you ask such a doctor if you were able to interview them on background or otherwise?
Well, I have managed to find a few. No one has been willing to talk. I guess the question would be, from a reporter's standpoint, would be, you know, what did this look like to you? My assumption is that they would say, if we were going to do these techniques, which is, of course, the big if, you know, would you rather have it done without any medical personnel around to prevent deaths and to prevent severe injury? And, for example, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, in his account, he's the person who's believed to have been the chief planner of the 9/11 attacks. He describes the medical people intervening several times to stop waterboarding when his oxygen level apparently got too low. And so they could probably defend themselves by saying, you know, we were trying to at least make sure people live through these interrogations.
Now, Greg Block, you are trained as a medical doctor, as a psychiatrist, right?
Yes.
Now, I don't want to, you know, rely on your expertise there, because I understand that you're a law professor at the University of Chicago right now. But at what point, and use your best guess here, does a doctor attempting to maintain life in such an interrogation setting actually become an agent for prolonging pain and suffering?
By merely stepping into the room, the doctor becomes an agent for prolonging something that is not just wantonly cruel, but a violation of international law. The doctors wouldn't be there unless the government at the highest levels was concluding that there is a risk of serious bodily harm to these individuals. So the doctors become a way by which the government justifies, attempts to justify behavior that, in fact, is grossly inappropriate. So the aura of humanity, right, becomes a cover. And so, therefore, becomes a way of facilitating the behavior.
Scott Shane, does the medical community have a consensus on what Greg Block is saying? And we'll leave it there. We've got 45 seconds.
I think there's been a big fight in the community of psychologists over this issue, whether any participation in interrogation or particularly harsh interrogation should be permitted by psychologists. I'd say that, as far as I know, the medical profession has been, while not outspoken on this issue, I think there's a fairly broad consensus that doctors should not get anywhere near
right.
this kind of treatment.
Scott Shane, New York Times reporter, and Greg Block, visiting law professor at the University of Chicago, author of the upcoming book, Do No Harm, talking about the presence of doctors in interrogations that could involve torture. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.